especially when it's orchestrated by the National Forest Service and takes place on public land. But what's most outrageous about these sales is that nobody's talking about them. A 1,000-acre clear cut on the west side of the Cascades would infuriate the public, especially if they heard that larger diameter trees and possible spotted owl habitat was being targeted. But out in Bend, these things are happening all the time and nobody's talking about them.
Well, what can people do about that? Everybody, that feeling of helplessness is what makes people crazy. You people do extraordinary work with amazing energy and intent, and as take no prisoners, this is where we stand attitude. So that obviously requires humor to keep it alive.
Yeah.
You have it. It's there. And even though what you do is risky, and it's still get people out. People need to get involved.
Yeah. Well, people don't need to compromise their safety or risk arrest even or do any of those things. Of course.
Oh, what the hell? Why not?
Yeah. But what everyone listening to this program can do is talk about it, right? Tell your lawmakers, tell your friends, and tell the Deschutes National Forest Service about how you feel about all this logging that's happening on the east side of the Cascades. You can reach the Deschutes National Forest Service also, in case anyone out there is interested, at 541-383-5300 and tell them to drop the Lex and West Bend timber sales.
Give us the number again. Give us that
website.
Number again. Yeah.
541-383-5300.
That's it. That's what you can do. Don't feel helpless. Just make a phone call. There you go. And talk about it. Get the word out. When these things happen behind closed doors and in media silence, then they go unchecked. And we wonder, when we drive through, we hike, what happened? What happened here? What kind of terrible disaster? Thanks so much, Cordelia, for that. We're really glad to have you on the show. We want to post
Thank you.
Of that material, all that information, of course, at the KBOO front desk. You can just ring up here and get more on it if you missed any part of that. And believe me when I say there's plenty more to find out about. We're going to go now to our next guest, Mike Meese, Buffalo Field Campaign co-founder. Mike is going to be, in all likelihood, a frequent guest on Air Cascadia, because, again, this is a story that people are not talking about. They need to talk about it. And it's something that is actually coming to Portland. There is a roadshow coming, and that's happening quite soon. It's coming up in September. And I'll let Mike tell you more about that. We've got posters here that we downloaded and we printed them up, so we're ready to go. And we want to welcome everybody else listening this morning to the campaign. And we especially want to welcome Mike Meese for joining us as our guest today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, talk about this. I found a flyer. I picked it up, and I was really moved by it in many ways. I was absolutely apoplectic and horrified at what's been going on. You have an amazing website. Everybody should go and take a look. I mean, I do not exaggerate. That is not an overgeneralization. Go have a look at this website. Go to www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Couldn't be easier to do. You'll get the information. I want to ask Mike, though, about First Nations and Native peoples' involvement. Why habitat and all the creatures that live in a particular habitat? You cannot take one away. You cannot move any of these pieces. Habitat and creatures are one individual entity, and there is a very deep spiritual and political dimension to the buffalo in this country. Talk a little bit about that, can you, Mike?
Well, I mean, that's the whole reason that we eliminated the buffalo from this continent, was to conquer the First Nations tribes from here. Basically, I mean, I had the honor of starting this group with a beautiful elder that passed away about a year ago, Rosalie Little Thunder. And the first thing she told me is, Mike, I come from a nation that calls itself Tatanka Hoyate, which translates to your language as the Buffalo Nations. And we don't consider the buffalo an animal. We consider them a relative, and that's how sacred they are. And then she always said this funny thing that just made me giggle, that was like, well, you guys all say you come from monkeys. Why can't we say we come from the buffalo? And so, you know, the relationship is so intertwined and connected. And, I mean, it was a give and give back kind of relationship. But, you know, back in those days, we used to also have the giant grasslands of the Midwest, you know, where we had 14-foot tall grasslands that were 100% dependent on that huge buffalo migration coming through and replanting the grass and refertilizing the soil. And so they came back every year. And once the buffalo were gone, we lost a lot of that as well. And so, you know, it's just like we don't like, you know, we paid all this money here in West Yellowstone or Yellowstone Park to bring back the wolves, and now we think we have too many, so we're back to the same antics, killing them all again. And it's just this cycle that we pick and choose what animals we think we want on this continent, but we don't understand the grander scheme of things, which is all animals, whatever your faith, were put on this planet for a reason, and they all have an important role to play to keep this planet healthy. And when we exterminate a certain species, we take away one of, you know, if you call them God's gifts, and when they're gone forever. And, you know, we just feel that these last genetically pure wild herd of buffalo that only exist in Yellowstone have a right to be, have a right to expand their population and start to grow back our country with their presence. And so we fight for them. And this government plan that ironically is funded by every U.S. taxpayer in the United States is to keep the population always about 3,000. Well, that's not a scientifically derived number, and it's all just at the request of the Montana Cattlemen's Association or the Montana Livestock Department, and that's what we're up against right now. Well, last year, they killed over 540 animals, or excuse me, over 740 animals, and, you know, it's just this constant slaughter, and they don't know what they're doing. You know, the ones that they kill are the ones that migrate to lower elevations outside of Yellowstone Park to survive, and so they're killing the smarter of their species as well in this process.
So, why are tribes left out of this discussion? These ratchets, land managers, all the politicians get together and they decide the fate of the buffalo. So why are tribes left out? What about treaties? There are treaties, aren't there?
Yeah, they're starting to bring more and more tribes in, but they're unfortunately using them to implement this plan that they developed. The treaty tribes are coming and doing a traditional hunt basically it starts in November and goes to the end of March, but no tribe in the world, unless they were starving, would shoot a buffalo in February or March because they've just survived a Yellowstone winter. Their fat cells are completely evaporated, and that's traditionally what you want in your meat. And the moms are less than a month away from giving birth to their New Year's offspring. And so, you know, the hunt is set up to be another extermination program. And I think the tribes are starting to see that they're being used more than they're, and I think that they're, you know, we have tribal members on our board of directors and on our crew here. And so, you know, these people are just tired of it, and they want to bring back wild buffalo to their reservations to be self-sufficient, to be self-sustaining. I forget that old quote, give me a fish, feed me for a day, teach me how to fish, and feed me for a lifetime. And it's that kind of analogy that if we would, you know, take these quote-unquote unwanted buffalo from the Yellowstone ecosystem, bring them to the reservations, it would empower them. And as we all know, most reservations in the United States are suffering right now from massive diabetes epidemics due to the commodities food program that the government has them eating. And so bringing back the buffalo would bring back a healthy diet and also cure a lot of illnesses that are on the reservations as well.
It would. It would indeed. There's a lot more to say on that, a lot more questions, and we have a lot more to talk about, Mike, and I really do want to bring you back to Air Cascadia again in the near future. But for now, before we let you go today, the roadshow, could you give listeners a little brief on the roadshow and what they can look forward to?
Sure. On September 23rd at 7 p.m. in Portland, we will be doing our traveling road show at the Bison Coffee House. I'm not 100% sure of the address, but it is on our website, as you so nicely
Yeah, I have it here somewhere in this stack of papers. It's around, I think, 60th and Cully. I apologize to listeners for not having that. I don't seem to see it. But nonetheless, it's there. We'll put it up on the website and make it available at the front desk. But that's September 23rd, and I am sure that Michael's going to, you can come back and talk more about the Buffalo Field campaign, talk more about the roadshow and what listeners can expect. We may have little clips. And thank you so much. My guest, of course, has been this morning Mike Meese, Buffalo Field Campaign co-founder, as well as Cordelia Finley with Cascade Forest Defenders. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, August 24th, 2015. You're listening to KBOO.